Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
Looking to step up your Mother's Day flowers? The Home Depot has an idea. Let Mom's Green Thumb do some digging with colorful flowers, pots, and premium soils to bring out the most in her patios, walkways, and gardens. Right now, get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 for strong, healthy, vibrant plants, indoors and outside. Shop our wide selection online and pick up your order in-store and give Mom the gift of a beautiful garden. Get Vigoro Potting Soil just $8.97 at the Home Depot. How doers get more done. See homedepot.com/delivery for details.
Hey, listener, are you happy with your current chicken wings? Do you wish you had something a little saucier? If you answered yes, then it might be time for you to break up with your old chicken wings and get a new honey. Lemon pepper wing from Popeyes. Share the wings with your friends so they can see it's time to move on, too. Head to Popeyes and get 6-piece honey lemon pepper wings for $5.99. At participating U.S. restaurants, price may vary.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Roto-World Baseball Show. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined, as always, by my co-host, Scott Pianowski. And even though everybody's talking about the NFL draft, we're here to talk about baseball. There's still baseball going on, lots of news, notes. We got two, decent slate of day games today, some games at night, and then a full slate of day games tomorrow, Thursday, prior to the NFL draft, or, a lot of day games, more than usual, to make sure that we get our whole day of sports in. Scott, you do two sports too. I'm sure it's a busy time of year.
For sure. The intersection of the sporting calendar, it happens in the spring. It happens in September. So it's the busiest time of the year for people who do multiple sports, but I wouldn't have it any other way. I love dipping my toes a little bit into hockey, a little bit into basketball. We won't talk about any of that stuff today. And I'm just glad the NFL draft is here, because there's been so much time spent on who's going where and who's great and who runs the 40 and who didn't do a pro day and all that stuff. It's like, okay, let's just figure out where everybody's going to be, get the rankings going, and you'll be able to draft on Yahoo Fantasy Football, by the way, very shortly. And also, I say this a lot and I'll say it again, there is still time. You got that FOMO for fantasy baseball. There's still time to run a fantasy baseball draft, and we're going to do the Yahoo Friends and Family draft next Monday. I've sent you an invite. I hope you've gotten
it.
Yes, we need Eric Samulski in that league. But so you're trying to figure out, should I be worried about Corbin Carroll? How has the market changed its attitude towards starting pitching? What players are moving up? What players are moving down? You will get a great snapshot of that next week, and it will be all over some of our content. So I just want you guys to be on the lookout for that.
Yeah, it should be a fun time. Anytime we get back into the draft room and fix some of the mistakes.
I'm getting it right this time. This time I'm going to have an A plus. Sure. Yep.
One of the mistakes that people, at least right now, maybe people are regretting, is drafting Jordan Walker, who was demoted today to AAA. And this is something where I was advising people to hold on to Walker early. I was suggesting that he be on your bench, but that you hold on to him. Obviously, that was prior to the demotion. I think still in like dynasty type formats and keeper formats, I wouldn't necessarily move on as quickly as possible, but I understand needing to. This is something I'm curious to see your thoughts. I dug into this when I was talking about why should we hold on to Jordan Walker. And first of all, I mentioned last year as a 21-year-old, he hit .276 with 16 homers and 7 steals and just a 22% strikeout rate at the major league level. That's pretty good for a 21-year-old. This year, he had a 12% barrel rate. He had improved his chase rate, and his overall contact rate had gone up as well. He was being more aggressive. He was swinging and missing more in the zone. And the ground ball rate was up a lot. So I think there were just a lot of swing decisions where he was being more aggressive and that aggressive approach wasn't necessarily working for him consistently, but he was getting to a lot of hard hit barrel contact. I didn't think it was at the point where the Cardinals should have just pulled the plug, right? There were positives in chasing out of the zone less, making more meaningful contact. But they're going to pull the plug. They're going to move him to the minors, and maybe he gets a chance later. I'm curious if, A, you think it's time for fantasy managers to give up on Jordan Walker, and B, or I guess B, you think it's time for fantasy managers to really think about drafting Cardinals outfielders while they still remain part of the Cardinals organization, because it's starting to be less a joke and more of something actionable that a lot of these guys don't click until they get out of that organization.
Right. Yeah. Famously, Adelis Garcia and Randy Arozarena popped after they left St. Louis.
Lane Thomas,
for sure. Unfortunately,
Tyler O'Neill's having a great year right now.
Bunch of them, right? Great examples of that. The Cardinals, last place last year. I know it's early, but they are in last place in the NL Central right now, a minus 30 run differential. I think what they're doing is kind of penny-wise, pound foolish, because this is not a great team. This is not a team that, you know, their whole design was maybe contend, maybe sneak into the playoffs. Nobody thinks this is a World Series contender. Mm-hmm. But the next great Cardinals team should have Jordan Walker hitting cleanup for it. And I don't know. This is always this thing. Is he better off going down the trip? I don't know what he's going to learn in Triple A. He may just beat up on it. This is a question. The frame of the team is a lot different. This is a question that the Orioles might face with Jackson Holliday at some point. He has struggled in his first couple of weeks. And at some point, you just want him to regain his confidence. Again, I don't know what he learns by hitting against pitchers that he overmatches, but it's where the Cardinals are at. And as always, when you see outlier stats, they usually come with some luck involved, in this case, bad luck. The expected average for Walker, it's not great. It's 228, but it's a lot better than the 155. The expected slugging is over 100 points higher. It's still under 400, so he's underperforming. But there are some signs that he's one of those guys that if he had stayed up with the Cardinals, he would just be like 1, 2, or 3 day period away from everybody like, oh, yeah, the buy low window is shut on Jordan Walker. He's like, right, his last 12, he finally hit a couple home runs. I mean, Julio Rodriguez just hit his first home run yesterday, for crying out loud. I'm not saying you can't ever send guys down, and I don't know. I'm not in the locker room. I don't know if there's anything else, if they didn't like something he wasn't doing preparation-wise or something like that. I can't speak to that. But if the Cardinals were going to do this, I don't see why they couldn't have waited a couple of weeks. I feel like they look at their team. They're in last place. A lot of guys are underperforming. It's not like you're ever going to send Paul Goldschmidt down or something like that. I mean, this is a card they could play. So they're playing it. I think it's a mistake. Now, what do fantasy managers do? I would try to hold them if you can. I know it's hard to stash everybody, and I don't want to give that. The cheapest advice is just to say stash everybody, because then if he comes back and is great, you know, we look good. And if he isn't that, like, okay, well, hopefully you moved on eventually, blah, blah, blah. I would not drop him unless you had an ad that you thought made sense. If he's standing in the way of progress you need to make on your roster, if the holes you need to fix right away, if you're in a smaller league, obviously the waiver wire is probably very rich. I can sign off on cutting Walker. I would try. I think in a 15-team league, you probably have to wait it out a little bit, hope he just mashes and comes back up. In the 10 and 12 formats, you're probably cutting him. But I blame this. I blame this more in the Cardinals than I do Jordan Walker. That's my stance on this.
I think we're on the same page there. The other big news from today, Wednesday, was that Blake Snell is headed to the IL with an adductor strain. You probably couldn't draw up a worse way to defend your Cy Young than to not get to pitch at all in spring training as you hold out for a contract, to finally get that contract and start the season late and get hit hard in every single start that you start in, and then land on the IL with an adductor strain. Listen, I DJ and I were asked this question on our Q&A, which we do every Tuesdays at 1 p.m. over on the RotoWorld YouTube page. Somebody said, how long do I hold Blake Snell? And I said, all year, because we saw this last year where he started out terribly and then he went on to win the Cy Young. He is a rhythm pitcher. He gets into rhythms and he does better. So I do think you want to stash him on the IL if you can. Adductor strains are tough, right? We're talking about a sport that is heavy on torque and moving the core of your body. So anytime you have a strain there, we're talking 4 weeks, maybe more. And so I don't know when we're going to see him back on the mound again. He might miss a whole month. But he's a guy whose upside is pretty clear. And if you have the spot on the IL, I think you want to stash him.
I'll sign off on that. But I just want to make the point. Blake Snell has one of the strangest careers for a pitcher who we all know is good. Mm-hmm. He's won 2 Cy Young Awards. He's made 1 All-Star team. He's won 2 Cy Young Awards. Those are the only years he got any Cy Young consideration whatsoever. He won a Cy Young Award in 2018 with 21 wins. He won a Cy Young Award last year with 14 wins. And I realize we're at a point where wins are getting devalued, and it's kind of a flawed stat. I get that. His career high in wins outside of those 2 seasons is 8. He led the major leagues in walks last year, a Cy Young season. His ERA was 2.25. All the ERA estimator says ERA should have been in the mid 3s, maybe even in the high 3s. Mm-hmm. And you go when you go to the ballpark and Blake Snell's pitching, you expect him to throw like 5 2/3 innings. He doesn't have a complete. He's eventually going to percolate. Joe Posnanski was talking about this week about pitchers just don't go 9 anymore. They don't throw shutouts. Obviously, the game's so different. And Blake Snell is, I think, the most wins anybody has without a complete game is like in baseball history is like 99 or something like that. It might be Sparkalo's reliever. And so obviously you're a reliever, you're not going to complete games. But Blake Snell eventually is going to set the record for most wins without a complete game. He's such a modern pitcher in that. Okay, go through the lineup 2 times, maybe 2 and a half times, maybe 3 times if you really got it. Remember that flashpoint we had in the World Series where he was mowing down the Dodgers and then they took him out. And unfortunately, they brought in Nick Anderson, who, albeit he had a really good moment as a reliever, and we talk about him a lot as, you know, the strikes and walkouts and go get those guys. He was on fumes in that playoff. So after Snell came out, Anderson came in. He basically lit gasoline on the fire. The Dodgers took control of the game. And that's forever been the debate point of, this guy's dealing. No. Trust the data. Trust going deep in the game, getting tired, being exposed to that lineup a third time. It's bad. We have proof on that. And I feel like baseball's never going to come to an agreement on that. And it's, I don't know. To me, I'm a big believe in data guy, but I think also the game, as Joe Torre would say, has a heartbeat. I think you have to consider some of what's tied to performance in that day and age. Bottom line is this, as I said earlier, you gave the right advice. Blake Snell's upside is too great. It's a pitcher park. It's a good defense. I know it's kind of not surprising he got hurt because, didn't have the natural ramp up to the season. He was obviously preparing on his own, but there's no I don't think anybody thought, he just signed, he'll just hit the ground running and he'll be one of the 10 best pitchers, one of the 15 best pitchers in baseball the moment he puts that jersey on. I don't think anybody expected that. So is this almost a blessing in disguise? It doesn't sound like a major injury. Bottom line, and I've never really been a big Blake Snell guy, I think I would actually try to trade for Blake Snell right now if I could.
In an NFBC format where there are no IL spots and short benches, do you think that you could hold him?
I would try to.
It's tougher for the next guy. We have an updated timeline on Tristan Casas, who we now know has a fracture in his rib, and the Red Sox have right now just said he's out a while. That's literally all we've heard. We talked again about torque and hitters and swings and stuff at the midsection, let alone stuff that deals with your ribs, not just like a soft tissue injury that needs to heal. This is a bone that needs to heal too. He's not going to swing for a while. So then the ramp up is going to require swinging and then timing, probably like a decent sized rehab assignment to get that timing back, stuff like that. It wouldn't surprise me if you're talking about like 2 months here without Casas, but we're speculating, right? We don't know other than out a while. I'm holding him in leagues where I have an IL. I think my gut is to cut him in like 12 team leagues, like NFBC formats, 12 team leagues where I don't have an IL spot, but I might regret it, but I think that's where I'm leaning right now. I don't know if you have a different opinion.
No, we have the same idea. If you have the storage, you do it. If you're no IL, I think you have to move on. And then I know, but it's no fun talking about injuries, but there's been so many injuries at the beginning of the season, and the Red Sox, a team I thought could had to make a puncher's chance at like 85, 87 wins, something like that. They got off to a good start, and just everything's gone wrong with injuries. It doesn't make them special in baseball because we know a lot of times injuries do cluster at the beginning of the season. But, man, right now, you know, Devers is nicked up, and they lost Story. Casas, we talked a lot about this on Monday. And that pitching staff that looked like so many right answers, they still have some guys we want. We still, sure. Tanner Houck can help you, and Cutter Crawford, I think he's going to go down as one of the right answers of the season. But they lost Giolito before he even threw a pitch for them, and they've continued to get hit hard with that. So maybe the 85 to 87 win team I was dreaming about is a 75 to 77 win team. But I agree with you. It comes down to if you have the injury storage area for Casas, I'll sign off. Otherwise, and here's the thing. I know it's hard to cut a player like this that you liked, that you invested draft capital in.
And that you know when he come when he's on the field will produce. So
for sure.
You have the fear that somebody else will pick him up and person will get production. You know, people were cutting Casas left and right last year when he started off the season slow. Because of my biased fandom, I held on wherever I could and picked him up wherever I could. And it worked out because he was great from June on. And so you could cut him right now and he's only out, let's say, 6 weeks. And he comes back in the middle of June and does what he did before. And you're like, why did I do that? I just feel like this is their wording is ominous enough here that I have no, I don't really have any faith he's back in like before July. It's really tough.
We talked Monday about when teams give you the sunshine, happy news, you be careful, have your BS detector on high alert. When teams give you bad news, you have to take it at their word. And you know, I don't want you being afraid to make a mistake in fantasy sports is the mistake. Okay. And I'll tout. I have Eduardo Rodriguez drafted him at the auction. And there's a rule in NL Tout that when a player hits the IL, if you want to cut him entirely, you can get his salary times 10 in free agent acquisition budget money back. And then after the All-Star break, it's times 5. But so if you want to cut, and you only have, I think, 3 or 4 IL spots, they've changed that. It used to be unlimited, and I think they've gone away from it for good reason. I think unlimited IL is a bad idea. But so I had Rodriguez. I think I spent $12 on him. So if I wanted to cut him, I get $120. $1,000 is what you start with. I decided, you know what? He's on the 60-day DL now. It's going to be so long before he's even back pitching. And then what if he doesn't pitch well? We've talked a lot about steering into relievers. I kind of want to steer. I do have Logan Webb on that team. He's very good. But Brandon Fott, who I think is solid. But I wanted to steer into a more reliever-heavy staff anyway. I don't know if Rodriguez is really all that great. So I decided to cut him. It comes to the first waiver period after I cut him, and Derek Hardy, who's a heck of a fantasy player and just a smart guy in general, he bid over $300, 30% of his fab on Rodriguez. And my first thought was like, oh, okay, you know, Cardi's a smart guy. What did I do? I screwed up. And then I looked at all the other bids. Nobody else bid on him, which I think reflects a lot of people didn't know he was available. But then I said, wait a minute. With all due respect to Derek, who is smart and a friend of mine, and you know, we've done a podcast together before. It was really fun. I'm trusting myself. I think I was right. And if Eric and if Derek ends up getting something out of that, that's fine. I mean, you know, good for him. But I came to the conclusion the right move was cutting Rodriguez, and it's and it's so easy. You ever do this in a draft, right? Fred Zinke always does this to me. Well, I'll be between two guys. I'll pick player A. And then Fred will immediately
player B goes player right B.
Yeah, and I'm like, well, Fred Zinke's smart. He did the right thing, right? It's like, wait a minute. I'm smart too, you know? I mean, I'm going to trust myself, and I want you to be that way. When you're going to, you know, some of you are going to cut a player like Tristan Casas, and then one of your rivals is going to pick him up, and you're immediately going to feel that pang of, oh, what did I do? Don't be scared. Just make do your diligence, make a good decision. Not every decision will work out, and then, you know, be fine with it at the end of the day, and that's what I'm going to do.
If it matters, I side with you on that. I would have cut Eduardo Rodriguez.
No good. I've done it. So it's you and me against Cardi. There you go.
Yeah. I also, in 12-team leagues, if I don't have an IL spot, I'd like to keep an IL spot. But if I don't have an IL spot in 12-team leagues, I'd probably be cutting Merrill Kelly, who is out for now at least a month, they've said, with a shoulder injury now that he's landed on the IL. He's undergoing more imaging to see the exact severity. But the Diamondbacks have already said at least a month. So you're looking at probably closer to 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks. Mm-hmm. Again, he's pitching really well. If you have the IL spots, you're going to stash him until those IL spots dry up and you need to make your move. But in 12-team leagues where there are pitchers on the wire, if I don't have an IL spot or my IL, I only have like two IL spots and they're clogged up with like, you know, Josh Young or Max Scherzer, who might be coming back soon, you know, things like that, I'd be moving on from Kelly because I just can't. I'm not in a 12-team league in particular where there's more options. I'm not going to play for 2 months down the road. I need to make sure I have production over the next 6 weeks, 8 weeks. And if I have to keep Merrill Kelly on my bench, I don't, even as good as he is, that's not ace upside to keep on my bench without an IL spot. I feel like I can approximate that with some good streamers and hope to land on a prospect who gets called up, or, you know, one of these guys who is off to a hot start who winds up being like really useful for a while, like Ronel Blanco or things like that. I don't know if you agree or disagree.
Oh, I do. I hate to be blocked from the fluidity of my roster. I hate you. One of the worst things you can have is a player who is, you can't start him, you can't play him, whether he's unreliable at the moment or he's hurt. You can't trade them, and they just stand in the way of you having progress with your roster. And especially in leagues where the wire is fruitful. If the wire isn't fruitful, you may be forced to hold guys like Merrill Kelly, but you're playing a man down. You're playing a slot down. And then other people are getting the hot pickups, and some fab weeks are better than others. I think last week was actually a really rich one. And I'm glad mm-hmm. in a lot of my leagues where I needed the fresh coat of paint, I went in there and I got out the paintbrushes and I had like three or four new players, in part because I'm just like that sometimes, a little bit of retail therapy. But I thought it was a good week for pickups. Maybe this week won't be. But when you hold, there are some guys you have to hold. I get it. But when you hold too many of those guys, especially in like an NFBC format with no IL spots, it's going to kill you when you're going to miss guy. And especially now, where for all the walk-up we do, for all the analysis we do, anything that happens in April in real games means more than stuff we were speculating on in March.
Right.
The real stuff you have to react to. And so I just don't want to play a man down. I don't want to play with less resources than my opponents because I'm giving somebody, especially a pitcher who's hurt, no guarantee when they come back. We always talk about when those 4 to 6, 6 to 8, always hear the high number, not the low number. Never assume the pitcher comes back, or the player for that matter, but the pitcher especially comes back at his level of previous effectiveness. I don't want you to be blocked by mm-hmm. by being an injury optimist. I always think that's a losing play in fantasy.
I agree with you for sure. We avoided a scare with Cody Bellinger, whose x-rays came back negative after he left the game. He's just day to day, so nothing really actionable there. However, we've seen that Matt Mervis was called up yesterday from AAA. It appears as though Mervis, I mean, it's only been one game, so we have to see how it shakes out over the course of you know, the next few weeks or so. But it seems like Mervis will probably be in the lineup regularly against right-handed pitching, you know, while Seiya Suzuki is sidelined, because Mike Tauchman is starting in the outfield, which has opened up DH for Mervis. And you'll probably see Patrick Wisdom in there against left-handed pitching. Mervis is doing basically what he did in AAA last year. He's hitting over 280. His strikeout rate is around 22%. Walk rate is over 14%. Good power. It didn't translate at the major league level last year, but this still seems like a profile that should be interesting to most people if he's going to play against right-handed pitching in a pretty solid lineup, because he strikes me as a guy who makes enough contact and has enough power in his bat to be a solid fantasy asset as like a corner infield type. And I know like corner infield is rough right now with, you know, a lot of third baseman, first baseman now with Casas too down, like in a league where my best option at first base on the waiver wire is Ty France. Like Mervis joins that conversation to me, potentially with a lower floor, but a much higher ceiling if it clicks.
Yeah, I'm open-minded to see if it clicks. And remember, he got such a limited amount of playing time last year. He didn't even get to 100 plate appearances, so we don't know. And I realize when you see a player like him who produces in the minors, but he's age 26 season, it's very easy to say, oh, he's just a quad A player, right? It's not going to happen. But he hasn't really given a chance yet, and maybe that he'll get that opportunity. It is a good lineup. And sigh of relief that Bellinger's okay. I have a bunch of teams that actually have Bellinger and Lane Thomas, and I know Lane Thomas is the most popular player. We'll talk about him in a second. But to lose both of those guys on the same night was painful for me. And if you told me, and I don't mean to be cavalier about these guys, it's their livelihood and everything. It's their human body. But if you told me that one of them would avoid the DL and one of them would hit it, I probably would have taken that. And it sounds like that's what I'm going to get.
Yeah, it's a little lucky on Lane Thomas. Unlucky on Lane Thomas, lucky on Cody Bellinger. Lane Thomas has a left MCL sprain. He is going to land on the IL. The Nationals are calling up Trey Lincecum, who had been filling in at third base when Senzel was out. But it feels like the logical change here in terms of lineup is that we'll see Eddie Rosario get more at-bats in the outfield for Washington. He had been playing semi-regularly, but it feels like he'll be in there more often now with Jacob Young and Jesse Winker. You know, Eddie Rosario has flashed in the past, so in 15-team leagues or obviously like NL-only types, might be worth a short-term ad to see if, you know, getting regular run in the starting lineup is helpful to him. And then Lane Thomas, look, it's an MCL sprain. You're dealing with, you know, they haven't given an exact timeline, but you might be dealing with around a month. I think you try to hold where you can because Lane Thomas already has 10 stolen bases on the year and very clearly is a solid fantasy asset. I don't think you want to drop him, at least until we get a more clear timeline from the Nationals.
Yeah, the thing that really hurts, though, is that Thomas wasn't hitting at all, and the only thing that was keeping his fantasy value afloat was that he was running so aggressively. It's a team that wants to run. We know Abrams is like that, and there's other players on this team. Garcia is like that. And so if Thomas comes back, I hope he's healthy enough to run because he may need it to offset. And a lot of people called for regression. I thought Thomas was a good fantasy pick because I thought he could give back a lot of his surprising 2023 season and still meet a very reasonable ADP. And I think he was going to do that if not for the injury. But unfortunately, now that he's hurt and it's possible to see him coming back and not as proactive running, that has me concerned. I got to admit, Rosario was better last year. Atlanta lineup, of course, totally different than Washington's, but he had a league average OPS plus. He hit 21 home runs. He hit 255, which won't hurt you. We know he doesn't run much anymore, but he was a better player last year than I remembered. I know he hasn't hit a bit this year, but it's, what is it, 50, 60 at bats, so what? I think this team still is a little bit plucky. I mean, we know Abrams is really good. They're getting Ruiz back. Jesse Winker, we talked about some on Monday. He's always been able to hit when he's healthy. It seems like he's healthy again. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Washington's a losing team, but I think there's more fantasy value to be mined here than maybe we thought a month ago. We like a couple other pitchers, too. We've talked about them a lot. So, unfortunately, it looks like Lane Thomas won't be a part of that for a while, but I don't want you to just blow off this team. Like, oh, okay, if you don't have C.J. Abrams, who cares? There's other guys here who I'm interested in, and maybe even Rosario is going to be one of those guys.
Yeah. We'll end with some pitchers. Just a quick note because it segues into the pitchers. DJ LeMahieu had a setback on his foot and is going to see another doctor. I don't know that many people were rostering LeMahieu outside of really deep formats, hoping he was going to come back. It seems like that will be delayed. I don't know that he's fantasy relevant until he's out on the field again because we don't know what we're going to get from him. His teammate, Gerrit Cole, is set to move to bullpen work, like mound work, next week. He was throwing from 120 feet flat ground. He's going to move to mound work next week. Mound work, you know, bullpens are going to build up till he can go to games. And then from games, he's going to be in rehab, you know, a rehab assignment, then come back. So there's still a long road for Gerrit Cole, but we're moving in the right direction. Brian Wu has already had a rehab assignment, and Max Scherzer is going to have a rehab start this week. So between those three guys, Gerrit Cole, maybe still a couple months away, but trending in the right direction. Scherzer and Wu probably, you know, within a month, we see them back at the major league level. Do you have interest in any or all of those three pitchers?
I'm interested in all three of them. Cole is probably the one that concerns me the most because he's the furthest away, but we know a semi-healthy Gerrit Cole could be worth. Scherzer's just one of those guys, you know, like Clayton Kershaw, like Verlander. If they're healthy, hopefully like Jacob DeGrom, if they're healthy enough to pitch, they're going to be good. I'm not worried about that. And Wu, the idea for me before the season was to draft as many Seattle pitchers as I could. I didn't get as much Wu as I thought I would. And then he got hurt early, so I thought maybe I dodged a bullet. But I still think anybody in that rotation, the park, it's just it can't be understated that when you the Giants enjoy this, the Mariners enjoy this, when you're not petrified to pitch in the zone because every piece of contact is going to be like the warning track or a home run or something like that, it allows you to be so much more efficient and so much more effective. And it sounds overly simplistic, but I want until Seattle plays in a different park or something changes, mm-hmm. I want you to get their pitchers as long as they're, you know, they have some level of talent that you need. You can't just throw five, you know, journeymen out there, but I still think this rotation, and if there's any discount on George Kirby, there probably isn't if your league is smart, but who knows? Some people might overreact once we get to May and his ERA isn't where it should be. That's really just one bad start. We saw Gilbert look great on Tuesday night. Anybody in the Seattle rotation is of interest to me, and that includes Wu.
That stadium argument also applies to, you know, Scherzer and the Rangers, who also mm-hmm. have a great stadium. Scherzer is one of those guys where we know he's going to be solid when he's healthy. We don't know how long he stays healthy. Back injuries are a concern. But I agree with you. I have interest in all three. I'm not yet, like, if I'm in a league without an IL spot, I'm not yet picking up a Gerrit Cole because I still think he's, you know, 2 months away, and I don't really know what's going to happen with that. But, you know, Cole's rostered in most – all three of these guys are rostered in most places. I think Wu, who only threw 35 pitches in his first rehab start and looked good, but he might need two, maybe even three more to build up to come back. So we're still looking at a little bit of time, but I like all these
guys. I'm glad you mentioned the Texas park, too, because it took me a while just to get it through my mind that, you know, they played in Arlington forever, which was – just had a jet stream to right center field. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I don't know how they ever had – an outdoor park in Texas as long as they did. I went to a game in Texas a few years ago. It was August game. A few years ago, it was probably a solid decade ago. August game, night game, and it was just so humid and gross. I've never been to a baseball game I wanted to end quicker than that game. Even though the park was beautiful, it was a good game. I think it was a 10-inning game between the Rangers and the Yankees, and it's just like, this is disgusting. I don't know how Pudge Rodriguez lived through all those games.
Right, all catch.
Right, but it's, you know, the indoor park they have now is totally different, right? And it took me a while to just stop thinking, Texas, great place to hit. Right. You know, it's not. No, it's not. It's a great place to pitch.
Which is also the case now for Baltimore, and we'll get to a particular mm-hmm. player on Baltimore when we do go through our StatCast exit velocity leaders here in a second. But before we do that, the NFL draft kicks off on Thursday, and we have you covered with our mock drafts, positional rankings, player interviews, and news updates around the league. Go to NBCSports.com/NFL draft today for insight leading into round one, and check back throughout the draft for analysis of every single pick. You can also go to the NBC Sports YouTube page where we have positional previews, videos of positional previews for every single position, including some of the top day three guys. So this is content that leads into all 3 days of the NFL draft. We will have reaction pieces when they come out, so make sure you check that out over at NBC Sports.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
So our big topic to the day on the day is going to be exit velocity. Exit velocity, batted ball event data tends to stabilize around 80 batted ball events. We're seeing some guys already hit that. A lot of guys are, around 70 right now. So we're starting to see this begin to stabilize. And we want to try and see if there are some guys that we can lock in on as showing some real improvements in 2024. StatCast unveiled a new stat, which I want to look at today, which is called EV50. And it's pretty cool, you know, break that down to exit velocity 50. And the reason why is EV50 is an average of the hardest 50% of a hitter's batted balls. So it looks at the best half of all a hitter's batted ball events, and then says, what is the average of this best half? Now, why we like that for fantasy is it's not just like, hey, this is his max exit velocity. This is how hard he's capable of hitting the ball. It says, this is how hard he hits the ball the best in his best 50% of at bats. So if we're taking kind of like the average of who he is as a player, on the upside of that average, this is what his average exit velocities are. This is how hard he hits it. Carlos Marcano, who does really good work, looked at the EV50 in 2022 and found that it was really predictive of home run production in 2023. So it might not be predictive within the same year, but it suggests that guys who got to top end exit velocities more regularly tended to hit for more power in the next season, or as years went on even. And you can also look at the leaderboard, right, of like the top five guys right now this season. You have Shohei Ohtani, or we'll go through the top 10. You have Shohei Ohtani, Bobby Witt Jr., Kyle Schwarber, Gunnar Henderson, William Contreras, Juan Soto, Giancarlo Stanton, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Aaron Judge, Adelis Garcia. Like, these are all guys that we acknowledge hit the ball very hard, right? So in some respects, the stat, that is another way that kind of checks out this stat. I wanted to look at some people within the top 25-40 who stood out to me as being interesting, and guys we wouldn't expect, including the 12th guy on this list who realistically I didn't think had much of any power based on the small, again, the sample size of just one rookie season last year. But I didn't think Jordan Westberg was a guy who was going to hit for meaningful power. He is 12th on this list with an EV50 of 103.9. Technically, that's actually tied for 11th with Yordan Alvarez. So if he is hitting the same, if he has the same contact quality stats in terms of batted ball exit velocity as Yordan Alvarez, we know we're in the right direction. He has 5 home runs already on the season, 18 RBIs, a .316 batting average, and a nearly 13% barrel rate. I think I can just admit I was wrong on my expectation of the hitter that Jordan Westberg was. He never really put up – I guess he did have a 27-homer season in the minors in 2022, and it was 18 homers in 2023, but I just didn't buy into him being more than like a 20-homer guy at the major league level, and I probably need to recalibrate that.
I'm going to take the loss on that too. I never considered, not only did I not draft him, I never considered it. And Westberg, maybe part of the problem with him is that he's just such a part of a loaded organization that to be an interesting prospect, but not a glittering prospect, you get a little bit lost in the shuffle. His Savant page, so all the hard hit data, which is why you get on this list in the first place, it's just pinned to the red. It's pinned to the right. It's all red. It's gorgeous. Now, he's striking out a bunch. He's chasing a bunch. Yes. And so this is the type of thing you worry about. You think about like Ellie De La Cruz last year. And I realize like Ellie De La Cruz is blowing up baseball right now. You know, last year he was so good when he came up. I actually thought that he had a case to be on the All-Star team. It's supposed to celebrate the best players. He's one of the best players. Let's get Ellie De La Cruz out there and have some fun watching him play. And then the second half, I think he hit 192. Pitchers adjusted. Ellie didn't adjust, and not only did he swing and miss a lot. I mean, he swung and missed at a lot of bad pitches, right? I mean, he had some at-bats where it's like, you know, good morning, good afternoon, good night, go sit down. And, of course, now you know, Ellie's winning the battle this year, and I'll be very curious to see where he goes in the draft next week. In the case of Westberg, pitchers will adjust, and they're certainly going to stop challenging him, that's for sure, because he's just murdering mistakes and he's murdering stuff in the middle of the plate. But because his hard hit contact is so explosive, I mean, this is something that's kind of unseeable. We're deep enough. We always talk about stabilization. We're deep enough into the season that this stuff has meaning. And I talked about, hey, just draft all the Seattle pitchers, right? What about just draft all the Baltimore hitters? I mean, look, right. you had to elbow your way past some guy. You know, the Rutschman would have been hard to get, and Henderson might have been hard to get, but at least you and I were early to Couser. He's on a bunch of our teams, and I know a lot of our listeners got in on him as well. I have no Westberg. In fact, I might even make a FOMO pick for him next week. We'll see. Yeah. I just worry that, and I realize, you know, the Ellie De La Cruz story, he hit 192 in the second half. I'm not saying that's what Westberg's going to do, but there's going to be a second act to this. The pitchers are going to adjust, and I don't want to see at the end of the season, I don't want to see the bottom of his slider page to still have this ugly strikeout rate, to still have this ugly chase rate, you know, the whiff. All of those numbers need to get a little bit better for me to take him seriously long term.
Yes.
But if your contact is just explosive, man, I got to tip my cap. And again, I'm taking the L on this too.
Yeah. The chase rate you mentioned is up a little bit. The contact outside of the zone is way down. His contact rate overall is just 65%, Jordan Westberg. That's not good. And he has almost 17% swing and strike rate. So the contact he's making is super authoritative, and we like that. And his swing decisions, actually, if you look at like his swing decision metrics on places like Pitcher List, which have those rolling charts, his swing decisions aren't terrible, but his contact ability is just, I mean, it's like sub 10th percentile in baseball. It's really bad. And that could be part of selling out for power. So maybe he does need to recalibrate to kind of get more back more to that contact and give away some of the power. It'll be interesting to see how he adjusts, because we've seen the power now. We know it's there. It reminds me a little bit of the guy we're going to talk about next, which is Matt Chapman, who's 14th on this list with a 103.8 mile per hour EV50. Where like we know Chapman hits the ball hard. We've known Chapman hits the ball hard for a few seasons now, but also the contact rates have not been there enough, and we've seen the production dip. And I'm curious if you just think we're gonna see the same story again. Like Matt Chapman will continue to be, you know, really good on it when you look at barrel rates, and really good when you look at like all the Statcast sliders. And he's just gonna put up pretty meh surface level stats.
Yeah, I think Matt Chapman is who he is right now. He's gonna hit about 235 with like 17 to 20 home runs. He's your best friend if you have any of the pitchers in the Giants staff, because his defense, he's basically like a shortstop playing third base. His defense is so good. But so he's a useful player, probably a better real life player than fantasy player. But there's gonna be, and he's encouraging, he's actually running on a team that doesn't want to run that much. He somehow has three stolen bases. Nobody saw that coming. So maybe he's interested in steal. A lot of stolen base is the will over the skill, right? Just the willingness to want to do it. I'm a Matt Chapman fan, but he's gonna drive you crazy for fantasy, because when these guys who have the profile that he does with the high fly balls and the high strikeout rates, there's going to be like one month where he hits like 165. That's just part of who Matt Chapman is. And obviously he's in one of the worst hitting environments you can be in. I do think he's actually fairly projectable. I think we know what he is. There's some security in that, right? At least you know what you're getting into if you trade him, if you pick him up, if he's part of your team. I think he has a very narrow projection, which I'm okay with. Just no upside here. I don't want to start dreaming of this something. Yeah. He's going to go back to like all-star quasi MVP candidate. Not that anybody really thinks that's true, but yeah, just write down 232 and 18 home runs, and that's what you're going to get.
I was going to say the profile is super weird. He's swinging way more outside of the zone, but making more contact outside of the zone, and his swinging strike rate is down overall. But he's swinging less in the zone, but making more contact in the zone. It's all just like, I'm not sure what the approach is, other than because he's again swinging a lot outside of the zone, but swinging less in the zone. It is kind of like caught, like, you know, I guess somehow selective. Like, it's just a little strange. The barrel rate is, you know, under 11%, so it's worse than it was before, even though he's making good hard contact based on his EV50. It's a confusing profile. I wanted to highlight the next guy who we don't have to go into because we talked about the Orioles at length again, but number 17 on this list was Ryan Mountcastle, whose exit velocity 50 was 103.3 miles an hour. Mountcastle is hitting really well to start the year. I just think he gets written off A, because of the vertigo he experienced last year, which really kind of impacted his production. And also because people see him as like the guy blocking Heston Kjerstad and the guy blocking these top prospects. But he's hitting .333 on the year with a career high walk rate and a career low strikeout rate. Obviously, the contact quality is good. I just think Mountcastle deserves a little bit more respect.
Underrated player. You know, if they get one more pitcher of impact, and I realize that's not an insignificant thing, I would view them as the prohibitive favorite to win the AL pennant. This is such a good team, such a deep lineup. To the point that even if like Holiday doesn't happen this year and they send him down, so what? I mean, right. the team's loaded, man. The pipeline is so great. And Mountcastle also gets a little bit shielded because he's not one of their MVP candidates. He's not one of the faces of the American League, but almost his entire slider page is on the right-hand side. Just a really good underrated player. And also I wish, you know, I say that I want diversity of like ballparks and strategy and everything, but I just, for some reason, I hate the fact they moved the fences back a few years ago with that left field and everything, but whatever. That stopped them from hitting home runs. So, yeah, get as many pieces of the Orioles as you can. Mountcastle is one of the most underrated players in baseball right now.
Yeah, and he definitely has the ability to hit out of any park. The last guy I want to talk about, there's two more, but this guy is somebody who I guess would be surprising for some people to see up on this list because a lot of people are wondering if it's time to give up on O'Neill Cruz. But he shows up here 20th overall with 103 mile per hour EV50. We've always known he could hit the ball hard, but his strikeout rate is 37% this year. He's hitting 237. His barrel rate is just 5.4%. because the launch angle is lower as he's hitting almost 60% ground balls right now. What do you make of O'Neill Cruz? Are you intrigued because of this contact quality? Are you concerned because of, you know, the strikeout rate and the ground ball rate? Where do you land on him right now?
So the story before the season was, I can't take Yelly De La Cruz in the second round. That team's so deep. What if he gets off to a poor start? Maybe they'll send him down. Is there any chance the Pirates would send O'Neill Cruz down, even if it's just like, look, just go beat up on some players you're superior to, and then we'll see you in 2 weeks? I mean, the OBP under 300. I can't imagine how a guy who hits the ball as hard as he does has a slugging percentage of .355, but you know, you can never hit the ball harder if you don't make contact in the first place. And all of his plate discipline stats are really bad right now. I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world to just say, look, just go down, just go mash. You're coming back in 2 weeks. It doesn't matter what you do. Just go down there and hit .390 because you will, and hit like six home runs and come back, and then we'll have a great second half of the year. I'm concerned about O'Neill Cruz. Even at discount, I would not be interested in trading for him.
Yeah. It's tough. The swing decision metrics, the plate decision metrics, the strike zone judgment, all of that stuff is like sub 10th percentile right now. I don't see them sending him down, but I could be wrong. Weirdly, he's still making more contact than Jordan Westberg, which tells you a little bit about what we talked about Jordan Westberg's like overall contact rates not really being sustainable with these results. Is that Jordan Westberg has a much higher swinging strike rate and a much lower contact rate than O'Neill Cruz, but is making a lot more quality contact, a lot more line drives, whereas O'Neill Cruz is hitting a lot of ground balls, which given his speed shouldn't be terrible for him, but also given his power is not really what we want to see. There were some plate discipline concerns with him before, and so the fact that they're still here is not great. I've obviously trying to hold wherever I can. I'm not trying to like sell low because we know what the upside is, but I'm starting to get a little bit nervous as somebody who has him in a couple places for sure. A surprising name we'll end with here is Starling Marte. A lot of questions coming into the year about Starling Marte's health. He is 27th on this list with an EV50 of 200 would be crazy, 102.6 miles per hour. He's playing pretty much every day for the Mets so far this year. And his production has been really good while he's been in the lineup. I know that he was kind of just like a speed only asset for most people coming into the year, but he's hitting 305. He's got four home runs to go along with those six steals. I kind of feel like this is legitimate. Like, nothing about this feels fluky to me. Like, sure, maybe the batting average could settle around like 280, but I don't think this is somebody who's like way out over his skis. And I'm curious if you would agree.
No, he's always been an underrated player, just needs health. And it's also important to underscore that he's continuing to steal, even though his sprint speed hasn't graded out that great the last couple of years. Not uncommon for somebody in their mid-30s. But again,
double groin surgery too.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. The old double groin. You know, if you're going to have surgery on the groin, you might as well do it twice. But he's, again, a case of the will over maybe the raw speed, over the raw skill. So he's still interested in doing that. Mets lineup as a whole, I think, is average at best. There's some dead spots in it. And obviously, they just lost Alvarez. I don't really know who Brett Beatty is right now. He's hitting better for average, but he's not hitting for any power whatsoever. Marte, we talk about, you know, 10 years ago, I was always pounding the table. Abania's All-Stars, boring value veterans. Mm-hmm. And I'm still interested in that type of player, but I've tried to, especially in fantasy football, but also in fantasy baseball, I've tried to skew younger because that's where the career seasons are, right? And that's where the MVP, that's where the improvement is. That's where the spike seasons are. Not that, you know, every once in a while somebody has like a great year out of nowhere at age 34, but that's not right. The way to bet. That's just not the way aging curves work. That's not the way the whole actuary business works. But there's going to be cases where a player hits a certain age, people just write them off, or it's just there's no more buzz. Again, they're boring players. And even though I don't use that frame as much as I used to, I think it perfectly fits Starling Marte, and I think he's going to easily pay back or make profit on what was a reasonable spring ADP.
Yeah, it's nice when you can get those boring guys and they work out for you. A couple names I'm going to throw at you that appear in the top 40 of this EV50 stat. And I'm curious if there's a name that maybe jumps out as like a guy that you believe in more than the others. But Wilson Contreras, Brandon Drury, Riley Green, Brenton Doyle, Ty France, and Josh Naylor all also show up in the top 40. Is there anybody here that you're thinking warrants more attention?
I swear I'm not just saying this because it's convenient because he hit two home runs last night, but I'm a Riley Green guy. I was a Riley Green guy before the season. I like that he looks like he's going to hit leadoff more often than not going forward because volume is a big part of fantasy. Drury's been hurt early in the season. I still think he's going to be useful. He plays all over the field. The Angels haven't. Their offense has been a little bit better than I expected, so I'm still interested in Brandon Drury. Wilson Contreras, I guess he's not the quote-unquote good Contreras. Willem has usurped him, but sure. he's still a good hitter, man. And he's second year with a new team, big contract. I think he's going to be a profit guy. And at least Brenton Doyle is Colorado. That lineup will depress you, and you have to deal with when they go on the road, their timing's all screwed up and everything. So you have to live with that. The first four names, I'm interested in all of those guys. Green's like pound the table. I want you to have him. Drury's probably cut in some leagues. I think I'd add him if I could. I still think Wilson Contreras will at least meet his ADP, maybe beat it. Doyle's one of the few things I'm interested in Colorado. You would have to talk me into France, and you'd probably have to talk me into Naylor too.
Oh, I love Josh Naylor. I think that Josh Naylor is perpetually underrated. People, when they were saying, oh, well, wait on first baseman, you could get like, you know, CES or Spencer Torkelson. I was thinking you just get Josh Naylor. Like, I was happy to take Josh Naylor over Spencer Torkelson. This is a guy that makes an elite amount of contact, sub 12% strikeout rate, career high walk rate, almost around 9% right now. He's hitting .321 with six home runs, 12.5% barrel rate. He's not like, it's like a lot of line drive. Like, he's not pulling the ball significantly more. He only has a 35% fly ball rate. So he doesn't sell out for power, but this is a guy who's being a little bit more aggressive in the zone than he was in the past, but still making 87% zone contact, 80% contact overall. chasing outside of the zone less. I just really like what Naylor offers.
No, you're right. It's interesting. I had no problem with the Contreras's. I actually conflated Josh Naylor and Bo Naylor. Totally different seasons. Yeah, Bo Naylor right now, you know, you put the ball on the tee and he's still making out. But yeah, no, Josh Naylor is, you know, last year he had a very quick, he even stole bases last year, right? I mean, but he's got a perfect batting profile. I can't imagine anybody who wouldn't like Josh Naylor to the point that I could see him drafted in a digit round when we redraft on Monday.
Sure. And I'll second your call on Bretton Doyle, who I am adding. I do a weekly ad drop video on our YouTube page, and he is my recommended ad for the week. He's hitting, 313 right now. I don't think that's going to stick, but he hit 203 last year. So we're seeing huge batting average gains because he's swinging less overall. He's chasing way less. His contact rate in the zone is now 87%. He has, according to Pitcherlist Rolling Graphs, elite strike zone judgment and is making above average decisions. I still think maybe his batting average settles around like 260-ish, 270, but he stole 22 bases in 125 games last year. Like, this is a guy who hits the ball hard and can run. And if he's hitting 260, it drastically changes his outlook as a fantasy player, because we were thinking of him as like a 203 guy. Mm-hmm. And he's proving to maybe not be.
Maybe a poor man's version of CJ Abrams, where he starts the year in the bottom third of the lineup, like Abrams did last year. And then the final, quarter, 70 games, whatever it was, Abrams moves to the top of the lineup, takes off, and now he's considered a full-fledged star. I don't think Doyle has the same upside. Nobody would argue that, but I mean, Charlie Blackman's like 100 years old. I think Bretton Doyle eventually will be batting first or second for this team.
And it's important to know, we don't talk about defense a lot here, but when you play gold glove caliber defense in the outfield, you're going to get the lineup
for sure,
pretty much every day.
Especially at center field, where we know the most important positions on the diamond are all the positions up the middle. Colorado, here's the thing that a lot of people miss about Colorado. They go, it's the thin air, the ball travels. Yeah, that's true. But the field is so gigantic. And there's so many cheap hits in Colorado. That's I think the main reason why the scoring is so crazy there. Mm-hmm. So you need to have you need to have a great shortstop. You need to have a great center fielder to have a fighting chance to get off the field. That's why Tulowitzki was so important for this team. That's why it was so important for them to move. They kept Blackman in center field much longer than they should have, and now he's pretty much just a DH. But Bretton Doyle is you could argue the most important player on this roster.
It's wild to say it, but I don't necessarily disagree.
It's sad, but it's probably true.
We're going to get to some guys really quickly to wrap up here that we're on the bottom part of this metric. But before we do that, Sunday on NBC and Peacock, the IndyCar series continues with a stop at Barber Motorsports Park, which is Sunday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern time on NBC and Peacock. So make sure you check that out. Sunday, 1:30 p.m.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? Step up like a boss and save the day? Or see what life's like under the Tree of Life? Did you? If you could, would you? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play. Bring the magic at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade, New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker, London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Just a couple guys at the bottom here. I want to ask you really quickly. There are some guys that we expect not to hit the ball hard. They've always made it work without hitting the ball hard. But they pop off here in the bottom seven hitters in the league in EV50. It's Luis Arias, Stephen Kwan, and Andrés Giménez. Basically make the least amount of hard contact of anybody consistently in the league. Do you care? I mean, we've seen them succeed without hard contact in the past. So this doesn't really move the needle for you, does it?
That's the point. That's what their script is. That's what their special sauce is. I am not at all holding it against them because I think we expected it before the season.
Yeah, the only one I hold it against a little bit more is Andrés Giménez. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is I think like as a younger player who hit 17 home runs in 2022 and 15 home runs last year, I think we were thinking, oh, could he push to 20? Like, is there more in the tank? So seeing him here with guys like, you know, Kwan and Benintendi and Nicky Lopez and Luis Arias doesn't make you feel good about him, you know, being more than a guy who maybe hits 12 to 15 homers, which again is not a problem when you could also potentially steal 30 bases and hit 270 or 280. It's just a recalibration of who Andrés Giménez is as a fantasy player.
Remember when Andrew Benintendi was great?
Very briefly, but
it was like 100 years ago.
Yeah. I mean, coming out of Arkansas, he was like one of the most advanced hitters in that draft. And this is the guy who like maybe changed his swing too much and tinkered with things too much because he made some changes when he was with the Red Sox and it seemed like all the power just dried up and it never came back.
Yeah, it almost strikes me like I'm old enough to remember when the Red Sox had a hitting coach named Walt Reniac, and he did like these awful things with Rich Gedman. He got him swinging with this whirly bird swing with one hand off the bat, and it was really painful to watch. And Benintendi, I mean, he came up, he was a hot prospect. At one point, the big thing with the Red Sox is, oh, they have three center fielders in their defense, right? They're all capable of winning Gold Gloves, and now he's gotten the big deal or relatively big deal, and all he does is hit like a kind of for a toothless average, and he hits like five home runs a year, and he's not even that old yet, and he's part of.
Right.
It's amazing. I know this is obvious. I just want to say it anyway. I would start anybody. Eric, you pitch against the White Sox tomorrow. I'm streaming you, man. That team, look out! Well, they have three wins. I think they've been shut out at like 7, 8, 9 times. Something like some crazy number for April, right? It's amazing how lousy that team is.
Yeah, I don't know. My fastball wasn't quite there.
It doesn't matter. Just don't walk anybody. Just don't walk anybody. It's all right. They're not going to hurt you. Yeah.
The Red Sox lead us to the next grouping I have for you, which is three rookies or rookie-eligible hitters who appear in the bottom 15 in EV50. Sadan Rafaela, Nolan Chanuel, and possibly most surprisingly, Evan Carter.
Yeah.
And I'm curious if you have any concerns here. My immediate reaction is there are some concerns with Rafaela's swing right now. It's a little too long and loopy. He's got too much of a bat rap. He's just late through the zone. But we talked about in the past episodes, given the current state of injuries with the Red Sox and his recent contract extension, he's going to get a chance to work it out in the major leagues unless he really, really starts to like, unless it becomes a detriment to him. I think they're going to try to let him work it out. Nolan Chanuel is somebody who, despite being a first baseman, never profiled as having a lot of power. He is an on-base percentage guy, so I don't think seeing him on this list really surprises people in terms of like, oh, this is a power hitter who's not hitting for power. It's not really him. Evan Carter is the one I think is probably the most surprising because we saw him do really well in a brief sample last year and then also in the playoffs, and I think that people were expecting him to hit the ground running a little bit, and so not only seeing him struggle, but seeing him not hit the ball hard is a little shocking.
It is. I thought he would hit the ground running, and I wanted to draft Carter and was getting skipped ahead in line, and it hurt. He was a FOMO miss for me. I don't know if you do a lot of granular work with this stuff. I haven't dug into this yet, but because he's so good at laying off pitches, I wonder if he's taking too many hittable pitches early in counts. I wonder if maybe getting more aggressive might be the solution for him. And I'm curious. I know you do some panic stuff. should we be panicking on Corbin Carroll? Should we be panicking on Evan Carter? Has Carter showed up on any of those articles for you yet? Or is he somebody what's your stance on the level of panic for Evan Carter?
He will, because a lot of people are starting to wonder. I kind of agree with you on what it is as well. Like his contact rate is above average, above MLB average. His swing decisions are above MLB average. Right now, PitcherList has a great stat where they do the rolling graphs for his swing aggression. So kind of like it measures the amount of pitches and the swing frequency above expectation. And he is below the 10th percentile in swing aggression. He just doesn't, he is not aggressive at all. His strike zone judgment is still above average. So it's not like he is, you know, looking at, it's not like he has a bad understanding of the strike zone. It's a young player who's potentially putting himself in bad situations because of how passive he is, which makes me want to give him more of a leash, because I feel like, you know, it's an easier tweak, right? Saying, okay, let's make sure that you are swinging it, being a little bit more aggressive, but trying to be more aggressive on pitches that you can do more damage on, not like just swinging at everything. That is a calibration that can be more easily made than like trying to change your swing, trying to add more lift, trying to, you know, things like that.
I'd bet on Evan Carter. I would, again, the manager who drafted him, I like to assume the people in your league are probably smart. If they're dumb, you don't need our help, but I would price him pretty similar to where I had him before the season.
Yeah. So that will wrap us up today, looking at our EV50 stats. Scott and I are going to be back after the weekend to go over some of the weekend news and notes, the waiver wire claims. And then I think we're going to look at some more pitching next week. It'll be a month into the season. We can start to kind of recalibrate our thoughts on who should be, you know, where in proverbial rankings, or whose breakout is for real, and all that kind of stuff. You can check both Scott and I out on Twitter. I'm at SamskyNYC, and Scott is at Scott_Pianowski. And we'll check you next week for more episodes of the Roto World Baseball Show.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.